On jobs, the president's kicking it up another notch.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It is the morning open. A look at the economy as trading gets underway for the day. We're going to check stocks and ask, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P down more than 1%. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow is off already, just 20 minutes in, off at 123 points at 10,266. European markets lower right now as well, about 1.5%. And Asian markets were off today as well. President Obama set to lay out some new steps to get people to work. He'll be speaking in about an hour and a half. And what we're hearing is that he'll highlight fresh spending on highways and other infrastructure, steps to encourage small businesses to hire, and new rebates to reward energy efficiency in the home. We're going to get some feedback on some of these ideas from Julie Nieman, an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live this morning from St. Louis. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So how effective can these proposals I mentioned be?
Well, probably the key thing is nothing's going to recover until jobs really start recovering. This is not a lagging indicator. This is coincident this time. The TARP funds have already been allocated. They can use it on infrastructure. They can circumvent the restrictions on reappropriating these funds. They've got a lot of unspent funds. They're going to finance a lot of new job creation, and that's what it's going to take to get things going again.
And you know, Julie, these programs will be expensive, I'm sure, and the president has talked about possibly using TARP bailout funds. I mean, what's your thought on that?
Well, one thing, he doesn't have to go back to Congress to use it because the Democrats pretty well will go along with it. The key thing is a lot of this stuff has been paid back and there's still more available here, so it's a pot that's instantly available.
You know, I remember at the beginning of the recession, we saw like fast food joints making a little more money because people were eating cheaper. But now McDonald's reports today a second month of a drop in sales. I mean, what's going on with the consumer?
Well, it's a continuation of the trend. They're really tapped out. Now, whenever you hit a recession, obviously everybody scales down and then they scale out. And that's what we're seeing right now. Everybody's being quite judicious about any disposable income, and it's not going to even low-end retailers and low-end restaurants.
All right. Julie Nieman with us from St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
As we know, unemployment is also affecting the ability to pay the mortgage, and the administration's Home Affordable Mortgage Program was supposed to help by lowering the house note, but there seemed to be some obstacles. And today, the House Financial Services Committee is taking a closer look. Marketplace's Ashley Milne-Tite is with us live from New York this morning. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Steve.
So why aren't things working out as expected with this program?
Well, a lot fewer people than the administration hoped have actually signed up, for one thing. I mean, we've all heard the stories about people trying to call their loan services and just not being able to get through simply because of the numbers of people who are doing the same thing. But it also turns out that only 30% of the borrowers who are in trial payment plans have actually given in all the paperwork they need to qualify for a permanent loan modification.
All the paperwork. So what's stopping people from turning in all that paperwork?
Well, I mean, you know, it can be a lot of work to fill these forms in correctly. I mean, in the level of detail that the government requires, and it can be tough to get your question answered on the phone sometimes. There can be a lot of back and forth there.
Yeah.
So that's one theory, you know, that is partly what is slowing the return of these forms. But I spoke to University of Maryland business professor Peter Morisi a bit earlier, and he says there's another good reason that this could be happening.
Many of the folks seeking modifications don't have the jobs and incomes necessary to qualify for permanent loans, even under generous terms. Going permanent requires validation of those incomes, and often folks can't deliver.
So when you apply for a permanent modification, you have to give written details about your income and submit tax returns and stuff like that. And it may be that many borrowers know they just don't have the wherewithal, so they're not handing in those forms.
All right. Marketplace's Ashley Milne-Tite joining us from New York. Ashley, thanks.
You're welcome.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, December 8th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Bank of America's board meets later today, and you may remember the bank announced last week it's ready to pay back the $45 billion it borrowed from the government last year. Well, there will be other things on the agenda as well, as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
With less than 4 weeks until Bank of America's CEO Ken Lewis steps down, a bank spokesman says it's a pretty good bet that his successor will be discussed at today's meeting. That successor has yet to be named.
So the bank has had to do a lot of searching both internally and externally, and from the rumors we've been hearing, it hasn't been going at all well.
Jamie Peters is a banking analyst at Morningstar. She says the repayment of the $45 billion TARP loan will help because the bank will be able to offer its new CEO a better salary.
With the repayment of the $45 billion of TARP, they no longer are going to have that extraordinary aid from the government, which means the Pazar will not be sitting at the table when they discuss a pay package to the new CEO.
Still, Peter says the bank's board faces an unenviable task, finding a CEO who can run the nation's largest bank and navigate the corridors of power in the nation's capital. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Sure, you've heard about hydrogen fuel cells for your car, but how about one for your home? Home fuel cells might sound like a far-off reality here in the United States, but they're gaining popularity in Japan. The Japanese government is pouring billions of dollars into the technology. It wants a quarter of all homes there to have them by mid-century. From station KQED, Rob Schmitz reports from Tokyo.
Ever since Shunsuke Ugajin got a hydrogen fuel cell, he's been the most popular guy on his block. Neighbors come over just to gawk at it. It stands proudly behind his house in Urawa, outside Tokyo. Ugajin shows off two steel boxes that look like refrigerators, one at full size, the other the size of one you might see in a dorm room. Inside the small box, hydrogen is separated from his home's natural gas line. The fuel cell then operates like a battery, generating enough electricity to power the entire house. The heat given off in the process travels to the large box to heat the home and the home's water. Inside, a display shows the carbon saved. A typical fuel cell cuts carbon dioxide emissions by a ton per year. That's around an eighth of what an average home produces. What they won't save, yet, is money. Buying one will set you back about $30,000, but a government subsidy that covers half the bill has spurred several Japanese companies to start mass producing them. At Panasonic's new fuel cell factory outside of Kyoto, special training computers instruct a row of 16 workers on how to build the cells. Analysts expect the price to drop to $5,000 apiece within 5 years. Ikutoshi Matsumura, director of Japan's Fuel Cell Association, says by 2050, one in four homes in Japan will run on a fuel cell.
Each of these fuel cells has more than 1,000 parts that are manufactured by more than 200 companies. If our market expands like we foresee, that will be a significant contribution to the Japanese economy.
And that success is attracting worried observers from across the Pacific, like Scott Samuelson, director of the California-based National Fuel Cell Research Center.
And the United States market for residential fuel cells should be inspired by the success, but also very concerned by the success.
Samuelson says Japan is a decade ahead of the U.S. in the lucrative residential fuel cell market, but the U.S. has made strides in the industrial sector. What the U.S. needs, he says, is a strong commitment to develop the residential sector, but in this economy, he's not holding his breath. In Tokyo, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Today, the Supreme Court hears arguments on an anti-corruption law and whether it should be scaled back or struck down. Prosecutors have used the law for a couple of decades now to convict people in corruption cases. From Washington, here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer.
The law says CEOs and public officials have to act in the interests of their companies or constituents. Specifically, the law says it's fraud to deprive someone of, quote, the intangible right of honest services. Say you're the CEO of a failing company and you use some accounting maneuvers that make the company appear healthier than it is. That could be illegal under the Honest Services Law. Critics of the law say it's too vague. Timothy O'Toole is a white-collar criminal defense lawyer.
it's very hard to tell before the fact what is permitted and what's not permitted. And what that creates from a defendant's perspective is that you don't know where the line is, so you don't know when you've crossed it.
Melanie Sloan disagrees. She heads the watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. She says the law is a valuable tool against corruption, which can be hard to prove, and the line between legal and illegal is clear, especially for the defendants in today's Supreme Court cases.
Even kindergartners would know that what these guys were doing was wrong. They just never thought they'd get caught.
The two cases before the court today involve a jailed newspaper tycoon and a former Alaska state legislator. Former Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling was also convicted under the Honest Services Law. His case is expected before the court next year. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, for American Idol fans from a few years back, this was the anthem of rejection.
'Cause you had a bad day, you take one down, you sing a sad song just to turn it around.
Daniel Powder wrote and recorded Bad Day, and his song is a big winner. It's Billboard's one-hit wonder of the decade. The 2006 song raced up the charts to number one after being used on the popular Fox TV show for all the contestants who were shown the door. And when Powder tried to follow it up with another hit, well, it didn't work out quite well. Maybe next decade. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Check us out online at marketplace.org. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.